Hi there, I'm Cindy Fair from Elon University, and very happy to be here. Just I wanted to make one quick comment in the fact that my student Jamie Albright presented before me. We've been working together for years, and we didn't really expect that both of our presentations would actually be accepted by APHA, given that they're small qualitative studies. So as I talk, you'll see some similar slides because it's the same data, but I am thrilled that she had the chance to chat here. And she's only an undergraduate, so if y'all have a job or if you're interested in her coming to your graduate program, she's right up here. Okay, we have no relationships to disclose. All right, as we well know, the AIDS diagnoses among those with perinatally acquired HIV infection plummeted in the 1990s, due in part to the interruption of mother-to-child transmission, but also due to the improvements in antiretroviral treatments. As time went by, the same antiretroviral drugs that were available to adults became available to younger people who were infected through mother-to-child transmission, and it kind of surprised folks, but actually, lo and behold, they were surviving and growing into young adulthood and teenage years, and that kind of caught us by surprise. Look at that, they're surviving. So people began to pay attention to the fact that they were adolescents and they were beginning to act like adolescents. They were engaging in sexual behavior and the sort, but the focus really at that in the last couple of years has really been on sexual risk and pregnancy and transmission. And I really wanted to take a broader look at the fertility desires and intentions of this maturing population, as well as their understanding of mother-to-child transmission. So in order to take a more holistic view, I decided to take an overarching model of reproductive decision-making. An RDM may be active or passive, and is characterized by varying levels of desire and intent to bear children. Previous literature includes the following aspects as part of the RDM process, and these are all decisions or events that influence reproductive outcomes. So we don't know a whole lot about the fertility desires and intentions of young adults living with perinatally acquired HIV. We know a fair amount about adults, though. We know that rates of desire and intent vary, that women with HIV, depending upon the sample size, rates and desires can vary from 25 to 59%, and within the general U.S. population, it's 36%. And we also know that our young people with PHIV are sexually engaged in similar rates as their uninfected peers, but that they're less likely to have unprotected sex. And as Jamie mentioned, the literature has really focused mostly on managing the complex medical aspects of a young female with PHIV, and then looking at obstetrical outcomes. So we recruited from two pediatric infectious disease clinics. The social worker approached them. We did semi-structured interviews. In order to assess fertility desires and intentions, we asked how many children and at what age do you want, then expect to have in the future. And in terms of mother-to-child transmission and prevention methods, we asked, do you know the risk of the baby getting HIV from you if you or your partner, depending upon whether we were talking to males or females, and we also asked, could they estimate the risk of transmission from mother to child? And then what steps, if any, would they take in order to prevent their child from becoming HIV infected? And we coded mother to child transmission understanding with if they said 0%, there's no chance, that was coded underestimate. 1 to 2 was accurate, and over 3 was considered an overestimate. So we had a total of 35 folks in our sample, mostly females, although I would just like to say that it's interesting that APHA put our abstract in the women in HIV section because there were men in our sample and they also wanted to be parents. So I found it was sort of intriguing that we got put in this section because I think that we need to pay attention to the boys as well. Most of the people in our sample were sexually experienced. About 15 had a biological mother that was still alive, and 15 had a biological father that was alive. They were mostly African American. The women in our sample were, many of them were using oral contraceptives, but our condom use rates were relatively low, with only 9 saying that they use condoms all the time. All right, so when we move into fertility desires and intentions, I'd like to draw your attention to the fact that 8 of our participants had ever been pregnant or ever gotten pregnant, gotten a partner pregnant. And of those 8, none of them had a biological mother that was still living. Our sample size was too small to really do anything statistical with that, but I think it's probably clinically meaningful. We had very high levels of desire to have children, and then of those who desired to have children, a very high intention. Most folks wanted, you know, around 2 kids and wanted to have them when they're around 27, and our average sample, our mean age for the participants was 20, so that's about 7 years away. The majority of folks wanted to have biological children, although we had a few individuals that said they wanted to adopt or have a combination of adopted and biological children. So now moving into knowledge of mother-to-child transmission, we asked, yes, you know, do you know the risk? And they answered yes or no to get a sense of their perspectives on whether or not they understood. Over half of the entire sample believed they did, with a higher proportion of males than females feeling confident that they knew the risk. However, when looking at the actual accuracy, only 23% were accurately able to articulate what that risk was. And although it's not statistically significant, it's compelling to note that 10 out of our 12 males thought that they knew the risk of mother-to-child transmission, but only one was actually accurate. The most common error was the I don't know answer, what I think one we're perhaps familiar with. And then the next in line was an overestimation of risk, and you can see there by the mean reported mother-to-child risk among those who could actually give us a percentage was relatively high, 32.5%. So that was kind of the bad news. This is the good news, so don't get depressed. So specific knowledge of mother-to-child transmission was relatively low. However, many in our sample could say, here are some things I would do. Here are the steps that I might take. And I think people should take medicine, not breastfeed, have a low viral load. And at the end of this session, this part of the interview, many of the participants would say, so what is the risk? I don't actually know. Or what is it like to be pregnant? Or I want to be pregnant, I just don't know who to talk to about this. So in some ways, having the chance to just interview them, I did provide information about the risks and told them to go talk to their care providers. So with high fertility desires and intentions coupled with low knowledge, that is concerning. And several of the participants directly addressed the issue of transmission in some of the qualitative data. And I just want to give you 2 examples. In this first example, you could see how giving birth to an uninfected child is a very powerful affirmation of personal worth. The idea that I could have a healthy child would be quite an accomplishment. And then in the second example, you can see how the participant really wanted to avoid any chance of having an infected child and wanted to adopt. There weren't any real trends among the 4 folks in our sample who did not want to have children. One of them had already had 2 kids and she said she was done. The other 2 didn't want to wake up in the middle of the night. I get that. And then they had career aspirations that they felt that having children would interfere with. So there wasn't a real lot to work with in terms of themes. Okay. So the levels of fertility desires and intentions that we found in this study are higher, and we hypothesize that's because we had a relatively mature and older group of young people with PHIV. Their poor knowledge is unfortunately found in other studies. It seems as though that's definitely an area where we need to be focusing our attention. The role of maternal loss in reproductive decisions has been touched upon in previous literature, but I think really needs further exploration. There is a clinic at University of Maryland that found that those adolescent females with PHIV whose biological mothers were still alive were less likely to get pregnant. And that may be just a case of maternal monitoring, but there may be something more there going on. And I really feel like we need to pay attention to these gender differences in understanding a mother-to-child transmission and what is being told to our males and our females. And the 18-year-old saying, I don't really know, from a man's point of view, how I could give this to a child. And that's important information. Our limitations are relatively self-evident. We had a qualitative study of 35 people, which I still find shocking, got accepted at APHA. And we also had little rare variability among the responses. So most of them really wanted to have kids, and most of them didn't know a lot about mother-to-child transmission. So it's hard to do analyses with that. So in conclusion, I really feel like discussions with young adults and adolescents need to explore their childbearing desires and intentions, and not just assume that what we need to tell them is don't get pregnant and don't get somebody infected. And that it's important to address loss and have open-ended conversations. Gender differences, as I mentioned before, I think are very important because it's our sense from another project we're doing in speaking to providers that providers tell very different things. Females get a lot of attention. Males, as one guy said, they just tell me to wrap it up and not get somebody pregnant. And that's important information, but it misses some of the subtlety and the complexity of human experience. And I would hope that we could be thinking about how these conversations could actually be a form of harm reduction. Do you want to have children? Let's talk about that. There are better ways to go about it than others. Instead of it being an automatic, don't get pregnant. If you have sex, tell somebody and wear a condom and not looking at the full context of their lives. And I would also, as Jamie said, love to thank the people that we talked to. A lot of these folks that we spoke to they were not open about their HIV status at college. No one at college knew. They were closed even within their families. And the fact that they took a chance and talked with us on the phone, I'm just very grateful to. So I'm going to stop now and we can move on to questions. Thank you. Thank you.